speaker tracker working and was getting frequent calls from Katie, who was on the freeway on her way up here. I knew that she would be here. And it is a great privilege to introduce my friend Katie O from Sherman Oaks.
Hi, I'm Katie.
Hi, Miss Katie.
This is a dream come true. Remember, no crosstalk. Plus, I don't know many of you, so I can say whatever the hell I want and not worry about it. I thought about this. Now you're going to get the tears, because you know, what an honor to be able to come to a room of people and share your experience, strength, and hope. Actually, share the gifts and the faith and all the love that I've gotten from the people through the years that I've come to these meetings. It's taken that much. You know, really, I've been coming to Al-Anon, I'm not saying this to brag, but just so you get it, like 24 years. Yeah. And the reason I've kept coming back is because I need you to love me. You know, I need to have no crosstalk, and I need to say what's on my mind. And I need to know that it's okay, that whatever I feel or think or say or do is okay for the moment, you know. And I, that's what I've gotten here, a lot of love, a lot of support. And, you know, coming to meetings, my life is not perfect today by far, you know, but it's so nice. I mean, perfect to me would be euphoria and never being upset. So that's never fucking going to happen. That's never going to happen, because what I've come to understand for me is that, you know, my understanding of my life is that adversity is the fertilizer of my soul, and that I need to have adversity so that I can grow and I can become a better human being and hopefully the unique idea that God created me to be. My arm's shaking. The reason I came to Al-Anon wasn't because I wanted to. I never wanted to come to Al-Anon. I hated Al-Anon. When I was a little girl, the people across the street, her mother was in AA, and they took me to a picnic. My dad was an alcoholic, just so you know. My brother was an alcoholic. My grandmother's an alcoholic. My great-grandmother's an alcoholic. My grandfather's an alcoholic. My cousins are alcoholics. My last name's O'Brien, so that just gives you... Most people think that I'm an alcoholic because of my personality. I like the personality. I do. I'm defiant. I do whatever the fuck I want, you know. I park where I want to. And I have the thinking of, why shouldn't I? You know, I'm not your typical Al-Anon, you know. I am controlling. I've got both of it, you know. I'm a little of both. Well, I'm more alcoholic than I am Al-Anon, but I don't drink, so that's the best part. I have a lot of fun. And so back to my why I came to Al-Anon is my dad's the alcoholic. And my mom, when I was 3, had a nervous breakdown, and she never really fully recovered. And, you know, if I was to be the psychologist of why she was having this nervous breakdown, is because she was, you know, she suffered from living with the disease of alcoholism. And she was an only child, and yada, yada, yada. So, like I was telling you, the lady across the street, they had these, you know, picnics, Al-Anon picnics. And I remember going, you know, Katie, you want to go to the picnic? And I was like, okay, I'll go to the picnic. And I remember even when I was, I don't know, 7 or 8 or something like that, everybody was so fucking nice, you know, at Al-Anon. And I hated everybody. I was like, what's wrong with these people, you know? And I was deeply affected as a child, I believe, you know. La da da da. But I was, you know. It was not an easy childhood. My mom, she was nuts. I was home with her. She went to Queen of Angels Hospital when I was about 4 years old, and she was in there for about a month, had electrical shock therapy and all kinds of good stuff. And, you know, she came home. She wasn't... She was pretty beat up. And I was just little, but, you know, right then and there, I took it on. And my dad was a drunk, and he wasn't drinking a lot. He was a periodic drunk at that time, but, you know, he'd come home and yell at my mom, and, you know, she was just totally full of fear and paranoia. And me and my sisters and my brother, we would, you know, try to protect her, and we'd have, you know, conversations in the bathroom discussing what they should do and how they should divorce her, you know. Anyway, it was crazy. And, you know, my dad would come home late at night sometimes drunk, and my mom would get us all in the car, and we'd go to my grandmother's, and they'd sit over there and tell us how terrible my father was and what a dirty son of a bitch he was, and, you know, and then... Some nights my dad would come home and take us in the car, and my mother would be screaming on the stairs and, you know, give my sister a driving lesson while he was drunk up in Sherman Oaks in the hills. And she's been scarred for life with her driving. She's sitting here right now. She says, you know, if you say anything wrong, you know, I'll know it. And... then we made a pact that I have my view, she has her view, and then there's the true view. So you're going to get mine. And if she wants to tell you hers later, she can come on up here. Anyway, so it was a very difficult childhood, you know. We ate in the fireplace sometimes because the gas was turned off. The electricity was turned off. Sometimes the TV was just broken and we couldn't watch TV. You know, we played all over the house. We had this two-story house, and you could go out on the roof, and, you know, we'd go through one window and climb on the chimney up onto the roof, and we were just wild Indians as children. And no wonder my mom was nuts, you know, because we were just insane. And she wanted us to feel free to do what we wanted because she was so restricted as a kid. And, but, you know, there were things like my dad would come home drunk at night, and she would put me in bed with her. You know, to protect her, to keep my dad from beating her up or yelling at her or screaming at her. And I remember laying in bed and hearing him stand over the bed drunk, you know, "Aw, Patsy, isn't that sweet?" You know, and drunk and crazy, and I would just be terrified, and I just keep my eyes closed. So that's not why I'm a lesbian, though. I knew you were thinking, you know. Because my sisters aren't, so something's different there. Anyway, I know that's an outside topic, but it is part of my story. So, anyway, it was really just crazy, you know. And I went to Catholic school, and well, at first I went to public school. My sisters and my brother were in Catholic school, and I was just terrified when I would go to school. And every day I'd, you know, just have a stomachache, and. You know, I'd tell the teacher, and they'd get my mom would come and get me, and I went home all the time. Because I think, you know, in hindsight, I was just so worried about my mom at home by herself. And I was just terrified to be by myself. Can you imagine that? I was terrified to be by myself, and I'm standing here talking to everybody. That's what I can't even imagine. You know, I was telling my sister... what a miracle I am. I mean, I didn't make it happen. God, you know, through this program has helped me to do miraculous things that I never thought I could do, you know, and have the courage to do them. Anyway, so it was a wild Indian party at my house with the drunk and the mental illness and all that kind of stuff. And we were all like, you know, kind of ragamuffins and didn't have many fancy clothes. And, you know, we lived in Sherman Oaks south of the boulevard. So, you know, everybody around us seemed to have everything. And, you know, a lot of times we didn't have too good a Christmas. Like, we didn't have a Christmas tree. Now, my sister, I know, will fight me on this, but we used to go on Ventura Boulevard, you know, Christmas Eve, and sometimes the old trees, we take them off the lot. And, you know, it was just crazy, really crazy. And it wasn't indicative of good self-esteem. That's what I'll tell you. You know, when I went to school, I was defiant. I didn't really want to listen to teachers or what they had to say. You know, I was always in trouble. I couldn't let anybody give me any guidance. You know, it's like I was just too afraid to let anybody run me. I don't know how else to explain that, but I couldn't let anybody love me either. I let them love me, but secretly, you know, they didn't really get to know that I was enjoying it. The lady across the street, she kind of, you know, gave me some sort of sense of order. Also, there were several TV shows that I enjoyed. Donna Reed, The Rifleman. I mean, it's crazy when you're a kid, you know? The Bob Hope comedy shows. I mean, I just looked for wherever I could look for some sort of something that would make me feel like I was okay, because there was no nothing. Like, my dad was so, like, hot and cold. We're going to do it this way, and the next minute you didn't see him. And I mean, it was just crazy, you know. I think I was about 6 when I learned how to fix a broken window. I'm a painter today because of that. But, you know, it was just a lot of tough times. And so as I grew up, finally my dad divorced my mom when I was about 10. And, you know, we all had to decide who we were going to live with. And to this day, you know, my mom, I was just in the car with her tonight, and she said, yeah, the worst thing that ever happened where you were taken away from me. And, you know, that's a constant bit of guilt. But, you know, I hated my dad for doing it, because I had to find a way to, you know, be with my mom. But I really realized today that he saved my life in many ways, because her mental illness was really difficult to be around. You know, she sees things, hears things, thinks people are doing things to her. You know, and just recently she's been staying at my house 3 or 4 days a week, and I wish you'd all come over and take care of her. Because it's really hard. Anyway, so I started coming to Al-Anon. You know, there's many other things. You know, like, I went to school and I graduated with a 1.6, which is a D+. And, you know, so that just tells you a little bit about how much I cared about school. I had a terrible attitude. I was like, you know, when I first came to Al-Anon, I came in the room. My dad had told me, you know, I'd been to Al-Anon meetings before, and I was just at my wit's end because I was totally addicted and out of my mind about a woman who was an alcoholic, my first girlfriend, who didn't believe we were girlfriends. You know, it was totally nuts. And, you know, I'd come to the rooms and sitting on the table similar to the one back there. And my dad had told me, you know, because he had gotten to AA, Kate, whatever you do, share at the meeting, no matter what. And I'd sit in the back of the room and I'd raise my hand. And I'd say, I hate all you fucking people and I don't want to be here. And, you know, as Al-Anons do, after the meeting, they all lined up to hug me. Thank God, you know. I came to meetings because I didn't know what else to do. I'd done therapy. I'd done ACA, which I just think is a big crybaby party, you know. No offense, but for me, that's what it was. I didn't want to be all sad about everything. It was time. I feel like it was my time to grow up. And I feel like that's what Alan gave me, his ability to grow up and become a mature, responsible adult. Which I can't even believe that I can say that about myself. And my sister's laughing. So when I came to the meetings, you know, I came because something brought me to the meetings. You know, first I went because I was just going to go. And then, you know, I shared in the meeting or whatever. And the next thing you know, I was driving the car back to another meeting the next day. And I'm like, I don't want to go to this meeting. Why am I going to this meeting? You know? And I would imagine you probably have experienced this something that's deep inside of you that takes you from doing what you think you should be doing to doing what it wants you to do. And that it is for me, my higher power, God. You know, I like the beard, the whole look. It's funny, you'd think I'd like a woman God, wouldn't you? But anyway, I just kept coming back to meetings. Like something would just take me back to meetings. I'd be driving in the car, like dun da dun da dun dun da dun da dun. I'd be sitting in the meeting and I'd share and I'd listen to everybody, and after the meeting I'd talk and talk and talk and talk and talk about this woman, you know, and how she did this and how she did that. And you know, I was just totally obsessed. And my obsession was all about approval, because she had become my higher power, because everybody was my higher power before I came to Al-Anon, you know, for the most part. And if you were shinier than the other person, I tried more to make you my higher power. And I gave you a lot of power over my life, because I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know how to live in the world, really. You know, I lived kind of, you know, by the rules of the religion I was brought up with. But the religion I was brought up with was kind of like, you know, get out of line, you go to hell. And, you know, God for me was not something that loved me. I felt like God hated me when I came to Al-Anon. I really did. Because everything was so mixed up and terrible, and I felt so screwed up in my head, like I'd been thrown in a wearing blender, and I was just, pieces were flying all around inside of my soul. And because I had exhausted everything in me to try to figure it out and to be okay, you know, I just really, when I got here, I just wanted to be okay. And that's what, you know, when I came to meetings, I didn't like it, but I kept coming back, and I called people on the phone, and I knew about the steps, and I knew about the one day at a time, and I read that book, and I read Understanding Ourselves, and I read this little book that had stories in it. I read and read, and I'd write every night. I'd write, "Dear God, I'm so scared, and I'm so fucked up, and I love that woman, and why can't I be with her?" And blah, 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 and over and over and over. I had like this many notebooks because I was this full of whatever. And slowly, bit by bit, day by day, something changed in me, you know, because of the love of the people in these rooms that listened to me and were kind to me and told me how great I was. I think they're lying. No, they told me that God doesn't make junk, you know, and I started to believe that. And they told me I could make a higher power of my own understanding. So, you know, my higher power is the father, mother, friend that I never had, that loves me unconditionally, that understands that I'm human, that I make mistakes, that I'm not perfect, that I'm scared, that I'm vulnerable, that I don't know how to do things perfectly. And that higher power guides me, and I completely turn my life over to that higher power, because magically I see today how I make a difference in the world, how, you know, I'll be in a store, you know, shopping or something, and there's an Al-Anon person, and they're all upset, and, you know, or something tells me to call somebody, and I call them, and they needed to hear from me. Just my life isn't about, you know, let me tell you, I want it to be. There's a part of me that still wants it to be the Porsche, the big house in Beverly Hills, and $1 million in the bank. But my life really is more exciting being an instrument of God's peace. And that's what I feel I am today. That's what I try to be. I abandoned myself to God, you know, a long time ago. My sponsor, I had a couple of different sponsors, you know. Some, you know, there's all kinds of sponsors. There's like the Catholic school kind of sponsor. Call me at 801. No? Well, you know that didn't fucking work for me. I tried it. It looked good on the outside, but it wasn't working for me. You know? And I finally picked a sponsor because I was a gay woman, and I wasn't quite sure how anybody would accept me. I picked a sponsor because she was Chinese. She wore a collar up like I did back there in the 80s. She was married to a black man. And I thought, and she said, fuck a lot. And I thought, there's my sponsor right there. Her name is Ruby, and she lives up in Canada now. We talked yesterday. You know, when I get upset, I call her. I'll never change sponsors, you know. Once you got something golden, you don't give it up. And I love her so much. You know, she's the kind of sponsor when you call her in the beginning, I'd call her and I'd say, Ruby, I don't know what I'm going to do. I have to pay the rent. It's Wednesday. I need $300 by Friday. I don't know how I'm going to get it. And she'd say, Kate, do you have a dollar in your pocket? And I'd say, yeah. She'd say, you have a roof over your head? And I'd say, yeah. She has some food in the refrigerator? Yeah. You have some friends? I said, yeah. She'd say, well, that's all you need today. And I'd hang up that phone. I'd think, that bitch. Why didn't she give me the money? But she gave me something better than money. She gave me faith, because that Friday came and somehow I had the money, you know? And, you know, I just want to tell you, I'm kind of all over the place because that's who I am. I didn't write anything down. I haven't spoken in a long time. And I just want to just speak from, you know, me. And I prayed in the parking lot before I came in. My sister's like, where are you? I was like behind the car kneeling down. And I lost the train of thought. You know, did this go off? It's all right, I got a big voice. Anyway, when I was younger, before I ever came to Al-Anon, I used to play golf. I love golf. You know, I thought that was going to, I would be a professional golfer and it would change my family's life. I'd be the star golfer like the next Nancy Lopez, you know. Can you imagine that pressure on the first tee? It's not what you do when you're playing golf, boy, I'll tell you. Anyway, I was good, but it didn't work out. Okay. So anyway, I don't know, I was working at some place. I got a check for like $190 back then. That was a long time ago when I was in my 20s. And I was practicing at the golf course, you know, a lot. And I went to the store and I wanted to buy some new jeans, you know, because I wanted to look good and buy a new shirt and just buy things, you know. And after I got out of the dressing room, I went to look for the money and it wasn't there. And I was like, somebody stole that money out of the damn dressing room. I know they did. I was furious. I didn't have the money. I was so upset. That money was gone. So about 5 months later, I'm at the driving range. I'm hitting balls. And I'm struggling in my pocket, you know, just to get 50 cents to buy a Coke. And I'm digging and digging, and I pull out $150. It's like even then, you know, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. He knows I can't save money, so he fucking hid it from me. You know? You know, there was an old guy. I love God. I don't care. I love God so much. You know, I come from living south of the boulevard. Really struggling when we were little, you know. Feeling less than. and, you know, just troubles. And I've been coming to Al-Anon, and little by little, God has helped me to have the courage to have a house. A home, you know, where I live, I have 3 bedrooms. And, you know, I've been living in this house by myself for a while. Actually, my mom has, like, invaded me. But, you know, I've been living in this house, and sometimes I just walk around and I go, I can't have this house. This is too much. This is too much for me to have. And then I have to think to myself, well, what about those people that are living on the hill that have, like, 10 bedrooms and they got a Porsche? What do they think? You know? Maybe this is okay if I have this, you know? Maybe it's okay that I have something nice. Maybe it's okay that... You know, when I was a kid, we had a refrigerator. My sister and I were talking about this. It was the kind where you had the handle and you had to click it open, you know? I'm really old. Not really. But it was broken. Now, of course, my dad, the alcoholic, he just figured if you took a knife, you know, you could stick it in there and click it open. So I realized today with my sister that we had that the whole time we lived there for 10 years, that broken refrigerator. And I used to have somebody come and open the refrigerator for me. You know, Monica, will you open the refrigerator? I want to get, you know, something to eat. And today I have the most beautiful refrigerator. You know, I like that French door refrigerator with the bottom drawer and all that. I love that refrigerator. And you know what? It'd be okay if I didn't have it anymore. It would. I don't really care about it that much. But it's such a blessing to have it and to be grateful for it. You know, it's every day I'm grateful, you know? Every day I'm grateful. I never used to be grateful for anything. I didn't even know what grateful was. And when people say grateful, I used to go, oh, God, what's wrong with you? Grateful. You know, but now I'm grateful for everything. I like enjoy the trees. I have squirrels that come out on my back fence, you know, and after it rains and they sit on the fence and I'll be brushing my teeth. They know when I'm coming to the bathroom and they sit there and they look at me like, where's our nuts? You know, I go out and feed the squirrels. I got a little St. Francis in me, you know. I have 3 beautiful dogs, the sweetest little babies, you know. I don't have kids. You know, I feel a little bad about that, but then I think, Jesus, kids. Oh, what a pain in the ass. That's just a little bit too much responsibility for me. You know, these dogs, I feed them, I love them, we sleep together, I leave, they're fine. You know? I just, you know, my sponsor... What she did for me was she taught me about a higher power, you know, really, because she wouldn't give me any other answer. I'd call her and I'd say, oh, my God, my girlfriend, she just broke up with me. I'm so upset. I don't know what to do, Ruby. She'd say, God first, Kate. I'd be like, God first? What the hell does that mean, you know? I'd call her and she'd say, let's do the 3rd step prayer. Come on, get on your knees. Get on your knees, let's do the third step prayer. Come on, let's do the 7th step prayer, Kate. Let's do the 7th step prayer. You know, and she just guided me to what the truth is for me today, that my dependency isn't on people, places, and things. Sure, the refrigerator's great. You know, sure, I like my car. The house is nice. My family, I love them. You know, I like talking to people and having friends. But the bottom line is that my dependency is on my higher power for everything, you know? And if it changes, he's got something else around the corner for me. I might be scared. I might be upset. I might be frustrated because I'm human. But I know because of these rooms and these meetings that I'm going to be okay. And that's what she said to me a long time ago. Kate, you just want to know you're going to be okay. And today I do. I know I'll be all right no matter what. I've gone through a lot of different things since I've come to Al-Anon. You know, my dad has passed away. My brother died of AIDS. You know, when my brother died, I was working at UPS. This is his anniversary month. 20 years ago, he died. I was working at UPS trying to be, you know, a really good employee and you know, how could I work at UPS? I picked the craziest shit for me. UPS, I was going to be a fireman, a golfer. Jesus, that's so strict, all of that stuff. You know? And I am not strict. God gave me employment. He gave me, I'm a freelance, you know? I work for my higher power. Anyway, but my brother was really sick in the hospital when I was working at UPS, and my sponsor called me and she said, Kate, you know, you're getting off tonight. You want me to ride with you down there? And I was like, ride with me? Nobody ever did anything like that for me, you know? I won't even go in, Kate. I'll just come with you. Like, she taught me, you know, like, I could have somebody be with me and not be alone. You know, Al-Anon taught me that I don't have to be alone. There's so many people that have said so many things to me, you know. There's a woman who told me a long time ago when I was new, okay, Kate, hold on to the seat of your pants. God's going to take you for a ride you can never imagine. And I think, what the hell does that mean? You know, what does that mean? I know what it means today. When you turn your life and your will over the care of God, you know, there are surprises on every corner. One of my surprises were this old man who had befriended me and my ex-girlfriend. And she had broken up with me, and he was 82. He was in AA. He had had a stroke. He loved golf. And I wasn't that close to him, but she'd go to breakfast with him and, you know, enjoy his company. And when she broke up with me, I was devastated, and I started to be friends with him. And we go to the golf course, and basically he kind of helped me heal from that relationship breakup, you know. He was there for me and listened to me. And about 6 months into our friendship, it was about Christmas time, New Year's, and he got sick, really sick, and asked me, you know, we were going to go to breakfast and told me he couldn't go. And I said, all right. So I brought him a bunch of food and soup and popsicles and whatnot. I got to his house and, you know, he walked around like this. He couldn't lift his left arm. You know, he was a sweet old guy. Anyway, so he was sitting like this to the TV, you know, in the living room. And he had come back from the bathroom and he had urinated himself and he was really sick. And I said, I'm going to call your son. No, no, don't call anybody. You know how alcoholics are. They're not going to the doctor. They're fine. I say that only because I can't generally say that about all of them, but I know my dad was like that. He broke his fist in the wall in our house, and he walked around for 3 weeks with a broken hand. I broke my leg. He put me on the couch while he finished his dinner. My sister broke her clavicle, and he let her walk around for 2 days with her arm hanging. So doctors are not a big thing in my family, at least. So anyway, I told Bill I had to call him, so I called the son. The son said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. I go home and do my own thing. About 6 o'clock that night, I'm thinking about him. Call him, call him, call him. So I call him, no answer. Tell my sister, call him again. Call him, no answer. We're going to go to the movies over in that area. Let's go by and see him. Okay, so we go to the house over in Sherman Oaks. Excuse me. And sure enough, we go to the door. The light's flickering in the window. And I look through the mail slot, and he's laying on the floor face down next to the TV. So as every good butch does, I broke the door down. Because there was no key. Called the paramedics. Paramedics came. They took him to the hospital. The next day, I went to the hospital that night. The next day, about 5, I went to the hospital, and his family was there. And the daughter came in. He had passed away about 5 minutes before I got there. And she said, Kate, you have no idea what a blessing you were to Bill. And I said, well, yeah, you know, he was a nice guy, and we had fun on the golf course, and we ate. And she says, no, you don't know. His worst fear was that he would die alone in that apartment. And what I realized is that God, in Bill's worst fear, had me come and take him to the hospital and have his family there around him in his last moments. You know, and that was such a gift to me because it showed me that God will do the same thing for me and everybody. You know, these are the things that are better than a Porsche, you know. I used to worry about what everybody thought about me all the time. constantly just thinking I could think what you thought of me and I'd act accordingly, what I thought you'd want me to be so that you would like me, you know? And somewhere along the lines, I lost that completely. I have no idea what you think of me, and I don't care. You know, today, I'm completely free of that. I really am. Sure, I don't want to stand up here like a pig and smell and all that, you know, and look terrible. Because I want to feel good and look kind of cute, you know? I have to represent. Somewhat, but I will not wear a dress. I look like I'm in drag when I wear a dress now. When I was younger, I looked really great. I did. I looked cute in a dress. But something took a turn, and now here I am. I'm grateful for, you know, all the people in Al-Anon that have listened to me and told me to read, you know, step one or step two or, you know, listening to all the meetings and all the meetings I've gone to. Because it's given me freedom, spiritual freedom, you know. It's set me apart from the rat race that we live in. It really has. And it's kind of a weird thing in some ways, but yet I'm calm, more calm than, you know, I can't deny it, though. I'm in the car sometimes, like, put the finger up and go to hell and all that stuff, too. My sister knows. But she could attest to the fact that I've slowed down in the car and, you know, my attitude's changed a lot. I'm not as angry as I used to be. You know, one great thing that happened in the last couple of years is not that my dad died, but my dad died and I don't have to have a stepmother anymore. You know, that sounds terrible, but for my dad, as a good daughter, I was loving to his wife that I never really wanted as a stepmother. But today I can choose not to be with her. I can be mature enough and say, it's okay. I don't have to be mean or rude, but, you know, I didn't like her in the beginning. I didn't ask for it, you know? These are things that I could have never done. I would have people pleased. I'd still be calling and, are you okay? And, you know, I've just gotten a million tools here to handle situations, you know, like they say in The Promises that used to baffle me. You know, I just know how to handle things intuitively. I don't know where it comes from. Big G, that's where it comes from, you know? Right now, my mom is 89 years old, and she's still mentally ill and probably even a little extra because of being 89. She can't hear, and she denies that she can't hear. So I don't know how you can do that, but she does. She denies that she can't see. I'll say, Mom, what do you think of this shirt like tonight? I can't see it. I mean, the lights are on and everything. All right, I'll come right up close. Oh, yeah, yeah. She has to get like this close. But, you know, she can't see out of one eye. She has a car that we've you know, told her she can't drive anymore because she ran somebody over in the sidewalk. And by the grace of God, she didn't hurt him that bad and everything was okay. You know, because, you know, my mom has suffered so deeply from the disease of alcoholism. She really has. It's evident. For so many years, she didn't have a nice car. For so many years, she had no money. She wasn't able to work, really, because she couldn't, I don't know what you call it, she couldn't get in with people. I mean, she did some, but it was hard on her, you know? Imagine it was a little hard on the people, too. But so today, you know, in her later years, she's getting a little more money because of my father's Social Security. And she has this nice car that she adores. And we don't want to take it away from her. So she keeps paying the payments and it keeps moving from the driveway to the street, from the driveway to the street, from the drive, because they're street cleaning. We have to move it. Jesus, I want to kill myself with that car. Can't we just leave it in the driveway, you know? No, we have to put it in the street. You know, I'm talking about this because today in my life, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. Bar none is to be a daughter that's loving and supportive to this person that at times I wish wasn't here, you know? And that's the honest to God truth because I feel so overwhelmed. You know, her talking about inane, crazy things. She called me in the bedroom 2 days ago and told me there were red ants all over the ceiling. Look up there. Can't you see those? And I'm like, no, Mom, I don't see any red ants, you know? We watch TV shows, you know, Dancing with the Stars, and she's worried when I have a DVR and I rewind it. You're ruining those people's lives. They'll never dance again. You know? She lost her keys about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago when we were watching Modern Family, and it was a segment about how the wife loses her keys, and he bent over and he said, see, here's the keys. And my mom goes, I knew he found my keys. He lives up the street from me, you know. Everybody lives near my mom. All cars are the same one that she owns. I mean, you know, it's just like so like, it's funny, but when you're in the midst of it, you want to kill yourself because you just can't take one more minute of that nutty talk, you know. It's like, I don't want her to be nutty. I want her to be okay. My mom was a dancer. She was a MGM contract dancer before I was born. And she danced with Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire, and oh, she was beautiful. She was in Easter Parade, you know, and she was one of the principal dancers that danced in Stepping Out with My Baby. And we watched it last night, and I looked at my mom, and I saw this smile on her face and this joy in her heart and this freedom of her spirit that I've never seen as my mother, you know? It was in the movie, and that's, you know, it's really hard that she's not like that, that she's unhappy and she's scared. She's so scared. And I struggle with this. And that's, you know, it's not alcoholism, but it's the effects of alcoholism. And I really have to find a way daily to come to a meeting and find some way to accept and love her for exactly who she is. And it's not easy. And I only have the strength and the courage because of the love of the people in these rooms to be a good daughter. I don't know what I'd do. You know, it'd be either kill myself or kill her if I didn't come to Al-Anon all these years. I'm so grateful that I was asked to speak tonight, you know. I can't even believe that I get to talk to all of you tonight, that you even want to fucking listen to what I have to say. You know what I mean? It's crazy. That's a crazy thing. You know, I certainly don't take responsibility for who I am today. I bless God and am so grateful that God made me a free spirit that set me free from so much insanity and so much fear and so much anger by coming to these rooms. You know, Al-Anon is such a gift. For me, it's been the most beautiful gift. It's given me a way to grow up, to have faith, to let people love me until I could love myself, you know, because I really do love myself today. I think I'm cute. But basically, I like who I am inside, you know. I try to be a good human being, and I have the steps that have taught me how to take responsibility for my actions. So that when I'm not such a nice person, I can make amends, you know, and I can try to change and not be that way again, you know. That I get to take care of my own little area here, you know, and that it's nobody's business how my area is being taken care of. That I am responsible for it, and I answer only to my higher power, really, you know. And God loves me. God shows me every day that he loves me, you know? Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here tonight. Thanks for all those Al-Anon people that have loved me all these years. My heart is so full of gratitude tonight. I don't feel so good, so, you know, I'm a little more teary. I told my sister, I'm going to be a little teary tonight. All right, I'll bring some napkins. She's a good Al-Anon, right? Anyway, thank you so much, Jack, for asking me to speak. What a wonderful Christmas present. And thank you all for being here and hearing me. Thank you.